This
Welcome
is Christine, and I'll be reading MRT for Tuesday, April 30th, 2024.
Read by volunteers
Kesley Salinas joins the MRT as General Assignment Reporter by Ben Schaefer, Staff
Texas
Writer.
Radio,
Texas native Kesley Salinas recently joined the Reporter Telegram as its newest reporter. Salinas was born and raised in the panhandle city of Friona between Amarillo and Lubbock. Following her graduation from Friona High School, Salinas attended St. Edward's University, where she majored in global studies and earned a minor in journalism and digital media. Salinas' first foray into journalism was an intern at the Friona Star, a newspaper in her hometown, during her time at home from St. Edward's due to the onset of COVID-19 pandemic in 2020. Salinas mostly wrote weekly news briefs called Town Talks for her hometown publication. During the summer of 2022, through her college, Salinas had the opportunity to study journalism abroad in Paris, France, where she and her classmates learned about travel writing in a program called The Art of Travel. Salinas was interned for the Latino news publication called Austin Vida, which focuses on Latino news and culture in the capital city. During her internship with Austin Vida, she had the opportunity to cover events like Austin City Limits and South by Southwest music festivals. "I like getting to meet people," Salinas said, about her passion for reporting. "I like getting to talk to them, getting to know the community, and being able to talk to people and write stories about them." Growing up in the Panhandle, Salinas is familiar with Midland and came to the area as a child when her brother competed in a high school regional track meet. "I was just excited to come back to Midland because it's still a city, but it feels like a small town to me," she said. Salinas said she is looking forward to becoming more involved in the community and highlighting local stories. "Kesley's background in Texas and West Texas will be a huge benefit to our ability to capture and share the stories of people, organizations, and businesses in the Tall City," General Manager Robert Granfelt said. The West Texas Symphony season finale slated for Saturday, Fantasy Comes to Life by B.K. Richter, staff writer. Imagine a world where characters from classic films like Harry Potter, Jurassic Park, Lord of the Rings, and Fantastic Beasts come to life. That opportunity is coming to the Permian Basin by the way of the West Texas Symphony's season finale performance, titled appropriately Fantasy. The final concert of the season is scheduled for 7:30 p.m. Saturday at the Wagner Noel Performing Arts Center. The concert will feature film classics as well as gaming and fantasy favorites like Video Games Live and World of Warcraft. "It's truly a performance set to turn one's imagination into reality." The show is the latest installment of the West Texas Symphony's 2023-2024 Pops and Family series. All ages are welcome to attend, as this will be a family-friendly event. Student tickets start at $12 for any seat in the performance hall. West Texas Symphony director Ethan Willis says this show was built around the "I rarely go to the symphony" type of patron. "In this show, we continue the artistic excellence of your West Texas Symphony with some of the most recognizable themes in modern music, each less than 15 minutes in length," Willis said in a press statement. "We pride ourselves on utilizing the Wagner Noel Performing Arts Center for its full acoustical ability. I guarantee it's a sonic experience unlike any other." Additionally, the symphony, Young Professionals, plan to host a mixer an hour before the start of the concert at 6:30 p.m. Individuals ages 21 to 40 are invited to stop by the second floor bar for a complimentary drink and meet other young professionals. This is also a way to learn more about the West Texas Symphony. The Fantasy concert is part of the West Texas Symphony's Pops and Families series, generously underwritten by the Wood Family Foundation. Tickets range from $33 to $60 and can be purchased at WXTS.org or by calling 1-800-514-3849. Student tickets are $12 with a paying adult or valid college identification. A special discount is available for groups of 10 or more. For more information on this or other WTS events, please visit WTXS.org. Fire breaks out at Space Monkey Smoke Shop by City of Midland, submitted to MRT. The Midland Fire Department responded to a blaze at the Space Monkey Smoke Shop in the 800 block of South Weatherford Street on Monday at approximately 6:30 a.m. Fire officials reported that the fire was in the ceiling and is currently under investigation by the Fire Marshal's office. Midland man jailed on multiple charges by City of Midland, submitted to MRT. Midland police officers were dispatched to the west side of Midland due to a disturbance with a weapon on April 25th at approximately 9:52 p.m. Officers reported that the incident in the 1900 block of North Midland Drive included a man armed with a knife and not allowing his girlfriend to leave the apartment. Officers arrived and observed both subjects through an open door, MPD said in the city press statement. The male subject immediately slammed the door on the officers and began making verbal threats to harm officers with a knife and gun. Officers forced entry into the apartment and successfully removed the female subject from the apartment before the male slammed the door again and barricaded himself inside the apartment. After approximately 1 hour of negotiations, 40-year-old Jason Williams surrendered peacefully and was taken into custody. Williams was later transported to the Midland County Jail, where he was booked on multiple charges stemming from this incident. No other information has been released at this time. New Mexico reaches settlement over flaring. By Susan Montoya Bryan, Associated Press, Albuquerque, New Mexico. New Mexico has reached a record settlement with a Texas-based company over air pollution violations at natural gas gathering sites in the Permian Basin. The $24.5 million agreement with Ameredev announced Monday is the largest settlement in the State Environment Department has ever reached for a civil oil and gas violation. It stems from the flaring of billions of cubic feet of natural gas that the company has extracted over an 18-month period but wasn't able to transport to downstream processors. Environment Secretary James Kinney said in an interview that the flared gas would have been enough to have supplied nearly 17,000 homes for a year. It's completely the opposite of the way it's supposed to work, Kinney said. Had they not wasted New Mexico's resources, they could have put that gas to use. The flaring or burning off of the gas resulted in more than 7.6 million pounds of excess emissions that included hydrogen sulfide, sulfur dioxide, nitrogen oxides, and other gases that state regulators said are known to cause respiratory issues and contribute to climate change. Ameredev, in a statement issued Monday, said it was pleased to have solved what it described as a legacy issue, and that the state's Air Quality Bureau was unaware of any ongoing compliance problems at the company's facilities. This is an issue we take very seriously, the company stated. Over the last 4 years, Ameredev has not experienced any flaring-related excess emissions events thanks to our significant and ongoing investments in various advanced technologies and operational enhancements. While operators can vent or flare natural gas during emergencies or equipment failures, New Mexico in 2021 adopted rules to prohibit routine venting and flaring and set a 2026 deadline for the companies to capture 98% of their gas. The rules also require that regular tracking and reporting of emissions. Ameredev said it was capturing more than 98% of its gas when the new venting and flaring rules were adopted, and the annual capture rate has been above 98% ever since. A study published in March in the journal Nature calculated that American oil and natural gas wells, pipelines, and compressors were spewing more greenhouse gases than a government thought, causing $9.3 billion in yearly climate damage. The author said it is a fixable problem, as about half of the emissions come from just 1% of oil and gas sites. Under the settlement, Ameredev agreed to do an independent audit of its operations in New Mexico to ensure compliance with emission requirements. It must also submit monthly reports on actual emission rates and propose a plan for weekly inspections for a 2-year period or install leak and repair monitoring equipment. Kinney said it was a citizen complaint that first alerted state regulators to Ameredev's flaring. The Environment Department currently is investigating numerous other potential pollution violations around the basin, and Kinney said it was likely more penalties could result. The City of Midland submitted to MRT. A double-wide trailer residence in South Midland County broke out in flames on Sunday. First responders from the Midland Fire Department reported a total loss to the residence located around South County Road 1167. The City Fire Department also stated that 11 Midland Fire Department vehicles responded to the blaze, including EMS units. Additionally, critical assistance from the Greenwood Volunteer Fire Department and the Northeast Fire Department was reported by the Midland Fire Department. According to reports, the fire took more than 2 hours to extinguish. There were no injuries reported at the scene of the fire. Thomas Burton Terrett passed away on April 26, 2024. The visitation will be from 5 p.m. to 7 p.m. on Tuesday, April 30th, 2024, at Nally Pickle and Welch Funeral Home. Celebration of Life will be Thursday, May 2nd, at Ranchland Hills Golf Course from 5 to 10 p.m. In lieu of flowers, please donate to your favorite charity, Tom Love Music, besides his Margie. He said, his one and only true love story. Arrangements are under the direction of Nally Pickle and Welch Funeral Home and Crematory of Midland. Online condolences may be made at www.mpwelch.com. Stevie Ray Cimental of Odessa, Texas, was born on May 20, 1991 to Dora Cimental Brito. Funeral services will be held on April 29, 2024 at 7 p.m. with Pastor Jacob Garcia officiating. Burial will be held on April 30, 2024 at 10 a.m. with Pastor Antonio Bracamontes. Services will be held at Reach Apostolic Community in Midland. Bobby Dwayne Graves, 81, of Lenora, passed away Saturday, April 27, 2024. The family will receive friends from 5 p.m. to 7 p.m. Monday, April 29, 2024, at Gilbreath Funeral Home. Funeral services will be held at 10 a.m. Tuesday, April 30, 2024, at Tarzan Baptist Church. Interment will follow at Evergreen Cemetery. Arrangements are under the direction of Gilbreath Funeral Home of Stanton. Online condolences may be made at www.mpwelch.com. Gary Thomas Brednich, 77, of LaGrange, Kentucky, formerly of Midland, Texas, passed away peacefully on Wednesday, April 24, 2024. A graveside service to honor Gary's life will be held on Thursday, May 2nd at 2 p.m. at the Bonaventure Cemetery in Savannah, Georgia, where he will be laid to rest beside Robin. In lieu of flowers, memorial donations can be made in Gary's memory to your local Humane Society or the National Pancreatic Cancer Foundation. Lisa Velasquez Vasquez, age 49, of Midland, Texas, went to be with the Lord on April 25, 2024. Cremation services have been arranged. A memorial service will be scheduled for a future date. Funeral arrangements have been entrusted to Evolo Sanchez and Thomas Funeral Home. Online condolences can be made at asanchezTFH.com. Brenda K. Lehman, age 68, of Midland, Texas, passed away on Friday, April 26, 2024, in Midland. Funeral services will be held at 3 p.m. Wednesday, May 1, 2024, at Sunset Memorial Gardens and Funeral Home in Odessa, with Pastor Jody Beyer officiating. Burial will follow at Sunset Memorial Gardens.
This is Mikey reading the Odessa American. The article is Court Ruling Big for Energy Industry by Bob Campbell, April 30th, 2024. Since the United States Supreme Court established the Major Questions Doctrine in 2022, the ruling has proved invaluable to the energy industry's fight against federal agencies seeking to enforce President Biden's 2020 campaign promise to end fossil fuels. The Permian Basin Petroleum and Texas Independent Producers and Royalty Owners Associations say the doctrine was set in the court's West Virginia versus Environmental Protection Agency ruling that agencies may not write regulations that would have major economic or political ramifications without congressional approval. The EPA had wanted to require the nation's power generation fleet to completely end the use of fossil fuels. PBPA President Ben Shepard traces the legal trail back to a 1984 Supreme Court decision in the Chevron versus National Defense Council case, in a doctrine known as Chevron deference was established. This doctrine provides a judicial deference that would be given to administrative actions by federal agencies, Shepard said. In other words, courts should defer to an agency's answer or interpretation of congressional action instead of substituting their own interpretation of that statute, as long as that answer is not unreasonable and as long as Congress has not spoken directly to the issue being raised. This is largely the doctrine that administrative agencies have relied upon to stretch their authority over the years, and we have particularly seen this stretching under the current administration. But through West Virginia versus EPA and numerous other cases, Shepard said, the Supreme Court has declared that if an agency seeks to decide an issue of major national significance, its action must be supported by clear congressional authorization. In the question before the Supreme Court having to do with EPA action under the Clean Air Act, the court determined that EPA had stretched its interpretations of congressional authorization under the CAA too far, with the majority holding that courts should presume Congress does not delegate to agencies or the administration issues of major political or economic significance, he said. Specifically, the opinion provided that courts should hesitate before concluding that Congress meant to confer such authority. This opinion is in line with the major questions doctrine. Shepard said states, individuals, and companies have since used the major questions doctrine to challenge federal regulations and in many cases have been successful. The doctrine itself may not be referenced by name in court documents, but the opinions provided by the Supreme Court in which the doctrine is utilized are quoted and referenced, he said. Not all of these cases concern upstream operations in the oil and gas industry, but they do impact the industry and should change the regulations that the EPA and other federal agencies create. However, not every claim challenging a regulatory action by a federal agency is ripe for a major questions doctrine application. For instance, the PBPA claims against the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service's listing of the lesser prairie chicken under the Endangered Species Act, which were adjudicated in PBPA's favor in 2015, were more reliant on illustrations of violations under the Administrative Procedures Act. Whether it is the major questions doctrine or other legal claims, holding administrative agencies accountable for their actions based on the authority they have been given by the Constitution or by congressional action is absolutely essential for the stability of our democracy. Shepard said two important cases are currently before the Supreme Court. The cases have to do with the rule issued by the National Marine Fisheries Services that requires the herring fishing industry to bear the costs of government observers on their fishing boats, he said. The Chevron deference was applied by the U.S. Court of Appeals for the District of Columbia Circuit Court to find that the service's interpretation of federal law was reasonable. The circuit court's ruling was then upheld by the U.S. Courts of Appeals for the First Circuit. Arguments have been heard by the Supreme Court and a decision is expected sometime this summer. While those cases have nothing to do with the oil and gas industry, Shepard said, they do entail claims of agency overreach and a broader Supreme Court opinion could impact the strength of Chevron deference, making it an asset for anyone fighting back against federal regulatory violations of the separation of powers. TIPRO President Ed Longenecker said from Austin that the major questions doctrine reflects a reversal of pro-regulatory bias in Supreme Court case law that started over 80 years ago under President Franklin D. Roosevelt. The court now has six justices who favor trimming the powers of regulatory agencies, Longenecker said. These are the justices who introduced the major questions doctrine as a binding rule of law in West Virginia versus EPA. Subsequent to that, an amicus group, including TIPRO, raised the doctrine in the three electric vehicle cases before the D.C. Circuit. The California Waiver Challenge, the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration Fuel Economy Standards Challenge, and the EPA Tailpipe Challenge. The D.C. Circuit recently used a standing analysis to uphold the California waiver and avoid the major question argument. If the D.C. Circuit rules similarly in the other two cases, or otherwise finds a way to uphold the two rules, the Supreme Court will likely accept the appeals and there's a good chance they won't have much patience with the standing argument. Longenecker said the major questions doctrine will continue to play a significant role in regulatory decisions. It's unclear how the doctrine will fare in the lower courts given the wide variety of judicial philosophies across the federal trial and appellate courts, he said. However, we will likely see a number of major questions doctrine cases coming out of the Supreme Court and lower courts with conservative judges in the coming years. This is especially important given the unprecedented number of rules and regulations being promulgated by the current administration, some of which are in extreme overreach that could endanger America's access to affordable and dependable energy. Longenecker said the timing of the rules and regulations is aimed at influencing this year's elections in favor of Biden and the Democrats and at preventing the use of the Congressional Review Act to overturn the federal agency rules if the Republicans regain power. Administrative Assistant Honored with United Way Award by Odessa American, April 30th, 2024. Longtime Ector County ISD Administrative Assistant Francis Franco recently received the United Way of Odessa's Outstanding Workplace Coordinator Award for her work on the Pledge campaign. ECISD's campaign is actually a series of about 50 micro-campaigns, one from each school and each administrative division. Franco is the point person for those micro-campaigns, setting up the introduction meeting for each of those 50 coordinators, making sure they have United Way materials, collecting each micro-campaign's donations, and coordinating with the various departments to ensure the donations are delivered to the United Way. Franco said she didn't realize there was such an award. "I was very surprised," she said. She added that she usually doesn't attend the United Way banquet. It's usually Atkins and other cabinet members. Franco has been with ECISD for 25 years and is currently Administrative Assistant to Chief Communications Officer Mike Atkins and does other things for people in the department. She is retiring. "Francis is the glue that holds the communications department together," Atkins said. "With 25 years of experience with ECISD, she knows all the procedures and knows just about everyone. She's smart and hardworking and is always looking for the opportunity to learn new things. Most of all, she is a great person with a genuine heart to help others, and that makes her special." Counting Franco, there are five people in communications. She has been with the communications department for 3 years and was in guidance and counseling and worked at campuses at the elementary and high school level. "It was edifying at times, but stressful," Franco said. She added that she's always been interested in working with students. Franco started working at a daycare as an after-school job in ninth grade. "My whole family, my siblings, they all worked in education here at ECISD on different campuses and different positions." She continued working with students and also served as a Sunday school teacher at Emmanuel Baptist. "I just enjoyed being around students and watching them grow during their aha moments and during their yuck moments and their panic moments. When I was at the high school counselors, I remember our seniors' second semester. They were just out of their mind, and I know it's because they knew what they were about to face with life. I enjoyed listening to their struggles, and sometimes they just want somebody to help them out," Franco said. An Odessa native, Franco went to Odessa High School. Her first cousin is Mary Franco, who is Executive Administrative Assistant to Superintendent of Schools. She has two sisters and a brother. Other family members also worked in various capacities for the district. "All United Way contributions stay local and are used to educate our students." Franco and her husband Toby had three children, one of whom passed away. One son works for UPS and the other works for the Smithsonian Institution in Washington, D.C. Couple arrested on family violence charges by Odessa American, April 30th, 2024. An Odessa couple was arrested on Friday night after each accused the other of domestic violence. According to an Odessa Police Department report, officers learned of an assault on North Tom Green Avenue around 8:30 p.m. Friday and met Sarah Porter, 32, and Katherine Porter, 31, at Medical Center Hospital. Katherine Porter said that during an argument over his wife's infidelity, his wife punched and choked him while he was in bed. According to the report, Porter said his wife eventually lunged at him with a dagger, stabbing his arm while trying to stab his neck. He also said she bit his forearm while he was trying to protect himself. Officers found a fresh bite mark on the man's arm and a small laceration on a wrist, the report stated. Sarah Porter told officers her husband grabbed her by the throat and choked her during an argument, but she denied stabbing him, the report stated. Officers found a dagger in the house, according to the report. The report stated officers were unable to determine the main aggressor, so they arrested both. Sarah Porter was arrested on suspicion of aggravated assault with a deadly weapon, a second-degree felony. Katherine Porter was arrested on suspicion of assault by strangulation, a third-degree felony. She was released Monday after posting a $25,000 surety bond. He remained in custody Tuesday on a $20,000 surety bond. Odessan arrested on drug charge by Odessa American, April 30th, 2024. An Odessa man was arrested on a felony drug warrant Thursday. According to an Odessa Police Department report, detectives with the Midland-Odessa Violent Crimes Task Force received a tip. Jamin Chavon Davis was selling large quantities of cocaine from his house on West 39th Street. Detectives arranged for a confidential informant to buy cocaine from Davis, provided him with a live-streaming recording device, and watched and listened to him buy 115 grams of cocaine from Davis on March 5th. A warrant was sought for Davis for a manufacture/delivery of a controlled substance, a first-degree felony, and Davis was arrested on that warrant Thursday night. Ector County court records show Davis is also being held on a second count of manufacture/delivery of a controlled substance. He's being held on a U.S. Marshal hold and surety bonds totaling $150,000. State of the Industry Banquet Set by Odessa American, April 30th, 2024. The Texas Restaurant Association Permian Basin Chapter will hold the State of the Industry Banquet from 6 p.m. to 8 p.m. April 30th at the Odessa Country Club. A news release said this year's banquet promises to be an insightful and enriching event, featuring distinguished speakers who are pivotal figures in the restaurant industry. TRA State Board Chair Skeeter Miller and TRA President and CEO Emily Williams-Knight will be addressing the audience, sharing their invaluable perspectives and expertise on the current state and future trends of the restaurant sector in Texas. Following the keynote speeches, we will be presenting the Silver Spoon Awards, a recognition of excellence in the industry. This ceremony will highlight the achievements and contributions of outstanding individuals and establishments that have made significant strides in advancing the culinary landscape of our community.
This is Christy, and I'll be reading Permian Proud for April 29, 2024, by staff report. Midland College announces 2024 Teaching Excellence winners. Dr. Terry Gilmore and Eric Gutierrez were announced as 2024 Dr. Stan Jacobs Teaching Excellence Award winners at a ceremony at Midland College on April 24th. The peer-driven awards are presented each year to faculty members making significant contributions through innovation in their classrooms and commitment to students. Dr. Gilmore is a professional of government political science, having taught government full-time at MC since 1997. She served as an adjunct faculty member for several years. Along with teaching government courses, Dr. Gilmore also serves as director of MC's Honors Program and as advisor to the college's Phi Theta Kappa Honor Society. Gutierrez serves as department chair, associate professor for automation, automotive technology, diesel technology, natural gas compression, and petroleum energy technology at MC. This year, he led his students to 15 separate awards in the Skills USA competition at district and state levels, according to MC. Gutierrez said being honored by his peers is an honor. A lab assistant described him as a great instructor who is constantly looking out for his students. Working in industry, I had a real passion for the subject matter, but I also had a really deep passion with working with people, Gutierrez said. So when I came back to work at Midland College, I get to work alongside people every day and talk about the very thing I love. Dr. Gilmore was similarly described as an educator who deeply cares about her students. One student recalled how she is great at communicating what she teaches and how her energy and positivity are contagious in a classroom. Dr. Gilmore also expressed gratitude for being recognized for accomplishing her passion. It's gratifying to know that even after all these years, there are some people who value what I do on this campus, she said, adding, I hope they leave Midland College with a lifelong love for learning. Thanks to the endowment of Dr. Stan Jacobs, a retired MC professor, both winners received a $5,000 cash honorarium and a plaque. Their names are also permanently displayed in the Peef House Administration Building, along with the names of winners from previous years, states MC. The 2024 nominees were transfer finalist Dr. Terry Gilmore, Professor, Government Political Science, Dr. Debbie McNeely, Associate Professor, Psychology, Joey Schenkman, Associate Professor, Biology, Workforce finalist Brooke Fouch, Department Chair, Instructor Nursing Vocational, Eric Gutierrez, Department Chair, Associate Professor Automation, Automotive Technology, Diesel Technology, Natural Gas Compression, Petroleum Energy Technology, Anita Schellenberger, Professor Office Systems Technology, Computer Information Technology, More information about the nominees and winners. Delete. Listen to this story at 2 p.m. daily. Listen to this story 2 p.m. daily via the Recording Library of West Texas radio station at www.recordinglibrary.org livestream.
Hello, I'm Jesse. I'm reading from the Odessa American for Monday, April 29th. City issues boil water notice. The story was written by Kim Smith. An electrical issue at one of the city of Odessa's pump stations has prompted a 24-hour boil water notice for Lawndale, Ratliff Ridge, and Yukon Ridge. City spokeswoman Monica McDaniel said the electrical issue caused the pump station to go offline and the water was off for 2 hours. Those issues have since been resolved, but the boil water notice was issued around 6:30 a.m. Sunday out of an abundance of caution, McDaniel said. Tests have shown water quality within the impacted areas were well within Texas Commission on Environmental Quality guidelines, McDaniel said. This is at least the third water boil notice issued in Odessa since June 2022. In August 2022, more than 20,000 North Odessans had to boil their water for several hours after a glitch in a computer system responsible for evaluating water levels and water pressure occurred. An increase in usage caused water levels to drop, but because of the glitch, operators were unaware of it and did not increase the pumpage to address the routine drop. As a result, the water pressure dropped below 20 pound force per square inch, and the Texas Commission on Environmental Quality required the city to impose a boil water notice. Whenever boil water notices are issued, cities are required to conduct tests to ensure there are no harmful bacteria and other microbes within the system. Back in June 2022, the vast majority of the city was without water for 48 hours when a 60-year-old 24-inch water line broke at 42nd and San Jacinto Streets. The crisis, which forced residents to boil the water for 5 days, cost the city nearly $607,000. Below is a question and answer from the city. Question: what about brushing your teeth? Answer: use bottled or boiled water to brush your teeth. Question: how long should water be boiled? Answer: vigorous boiling for at least 1 full minute is the safest and most effective method of disinfection. Question: what if I accidentally drank tap water before I learned about the precautionary boil water notice? Answer: if this occurs, don't panic. The chances of becoming sick are slim. See your doctor if you experience diarrhea, nausea, vomiting, or abdominal cramps. Question: how does boiling water make it safe to drink? Answer: boiling water purifies it because disease-causing bacteria, viruses, or parasites will be destroyed by the heat. Question: can I take a shower? Answer: yes. Just be careful not to drink the water while you shower or bathe. Question: can I use my ice maker during the notice? Answer: ice already in the freezer when the water pressure drops and before the precautionary boil water notice is issued is safe. When the notice is issued, turn off your ice maker. Any ice made during the notice should also be disposed of. Allow your ice maker to make 3 batches of ice and then discard that ice. Question: can I use tap water for making coffee, tea, lemonade, baby formula, frozen juice, or other beverages? Answer: no. Water intended for drinking must be boiled before using it to make beverages or use bottled water. Question: Can I wash food with tap water? Answer. Fruits, vegetables, and other foods should be washed with bottled or boiled water only. Question. What about washing dishes? Answer. Hand washing dishes. Wash with hot, soapy water, then use boiled water to rinse. Dishwasher. If the hot water reaches at least 170 degrees, or the dishwasher has a sanitizing cycle and includes a full dry cycle, this will be sufficient. Question. Can I wash my hands in tap water during the notice period? Answer. Use tap water and soap for hand washing and basic hygiene, but if you are washing your hands to prepare food, use bottled or boiled water. Top of the World, Black Magic Spring Show brings upbeat pop. The story was written by Ruth Campbell. Permian High School's Black Magic Spring Show will take you to the top of the world May 2nd and 3rd at the Ector Theater. Doors open at 6 p.m., and the show begins at 7 p.m. Tickets may be purchased at the Ector Theater website, theector.com. Lori Alfred Wash, director of choirs at PHS, said the theme this year is On Top of the World with Black Magic. Performers will include Black Magic and Panther Paws. She said the theme was influenced by the recent trip to New York, where many in the group sang at Carnegie Hall. They have been working on the show, which features upbeat, inspirational pop music and dance for the semester. Quote, "Everyone come and join us, and we appreciate the support of the community," Wash said. Dylan Chavez, a 16-year-old junior, and 17-year-old junior Jacob Lechtenberg are each in their second year in Black Magic. If anyone were on the fence about coming to see the show, she would tell them to go for it. Quote, "They have nothing to lose. It's a few hours out of their day where they probably would be sitting at home, and they could come watch us and give us support," Chavez said. She added the relationships she'd made with people is what she has enjoyed most about being part of Black Magic. Quote, "You get close with people like you wouldn't in any other group. It's not like sports where everyone has tough love. It's constructive criticism from everybody, and it's a really loving and peaceful place to be in," Chavez said. She's also in Cantori, the top varsity choir, and in Voca Lyrica, the varsity women's choir. Chavez says she wanted to join Black Magic since seventh grade when she came to see a show. Quote, "I had come to a Black Magic show for the first time when director Ken Seeloff was a director here, and just seeing the relationships that you could see on stage with people, the dancing, the singing, the soloist, the skits that happened, it was just so intriguing, and ever since then, I just wanted to join," she added. Lechtenberg said he's really excited about the upcoming show. Quote, "I think it's going to be a great time, and I think a lot of people will enjoy themselves at this show because we like to not only entertain people, we also try to include the audience in the experience, so whether that be going out into the crowd or doing different things to show, it's not just us on stage. We're trying to include the audience as well in the experience," Lechtenberg said. Like Chavez, Lechtenberg was prompted to join Black Magic in middle school. His choir teacher got him tickets and encouraged him to go to the show. Quote, "I was on the fence. I was like, hey, this looks kind of hokey. This doesn't really look like my thing. And instantly, when they started, I was like, this is something I want to be a part of. So finally, being in this group, I've had so much fun, and I'd like to also inspire the people. I think if you're on the fence, it's a fun time to get away from the rest of the world and have a good time," Lechtenberg said. He's had nothing but fun in the group. Black Magic members and parents are working on building and painting the set for the show on a recent Tuesday. They don't mind putting in the extra time. Chavez said, "It's satisfying to know people will see not only the work she puts in on stage, but on the setting for the show." Quote, "As of right now, it's a very trust-the-process type of deal. But I know in the end, it will be a good show. Miss Wash is working so hard to just have us all looking good and sounding good. I think it'll be a good show," Chavez added. Lichtenberg said he loves being involved in making the sets because he gets to see all the different pieces coming together. Quote, "Just seeing, you know, okay, I put not only working with the music and getting better myself, I also put work into the set itself, and it makes it more satisfying. That's like, oh, I put work into this, and it wasn't just somebody else doing it for me. It's more satisfying for me," he added. He is also in the varsity men's choir and mixed varsity choir. Argument involving Brick leads to arrest. A 38-year-old Odessa woman was arrested Thursday morning after her common-law husband told police she hit him in the head with a brick. According to the Odessa Police Department, the 52-year-old man called 911 from the La Casa Bonita apartments on East 52nd Street around 10:15 a.m. When police arrived, the man said, "Passion strong, hit him with a brick after he experienced some car troubles near the Sahara Motel on East 2nd Street, and Strong began arguing with him over money," the report stated. Police saw the man had a laceration on the right side of his face and bloody clothing, the report stated. Strong told officers they had been arguing because her husband had taken her gun without permission. According to the report, she said she threw the brick at the car and it accidentally bounced off the window and hit him. Officers found a piece of brick in the couple's bedroom, the report stated. Strong was arrested on suspicion of aggravated assault with a deadly weapon. She remained in the Ector County Jail Saturday on a $25,000 surety bond. Counterfeit Botox. The story was written by Carol A. Cates, Chief Nursing Officer, Odessa Regional Medical Center. "My mom was a prepper long before it became a thing. She grew up very poor, and there were many days where the only thing that kept her family from starving was the vegetable garden in the backyard. At harvest time, they canned everything possible to save for winter or the possibility of a future bad harvest. My mom carried that attitude of always making sure there was food available until the day she died. She made me and my brothers learn everything from how to butcher a chicken to how to can fruits, vegetables, and even meat. She would say, quote, when you are an adult, you may never have to do this, but none of us can tell the future. I would rather you know how to do this and never need it than need it and not know how," end quote. The lessons in canning always included canning safety, particularly in how to avoid botulism. Botulism is usually caused by someone ingesting food contaminated by botulinum toxin. Botulinum toxin is produced by the bacteria Clostridium botulinum. Botulinum toxin is one of the strongest toxins in existence. It is a neurotoxin, which means it paralyzes nerves. When it invades nerves responsible for things like breathing, that is when botulinum toxin is really bad and becomes known as botulism. Botulism can easily become fatal. Botox contains botulinum toxin and extremely tiny quantities. Those quantities are small enough that the nerve paralysis can be kept isolated to one small segment of a nerve. When the botulism toxin is administered in Botox by a trained professional, it can do amazing things. There are the cosmetic applications, which smooth wrinkles, which is what most people think of when they hear Botox. But Botox can treat so much more than wrinkles. It can be used to treat neck spasms, overactive sweat glands, overactive bladder, and lazy eye. One of the best uses of Botox is as a treatment for migraine. An old friend used to have the most debilitating migraines. They would come several times a month and would make her so ill she could barely function. They interfered with every part of her life. She tried Botox almost as a desperation move, and it worked. As long as she gets her injections every 6 weeks, the migraines are gone. It's been miraculous for her and for so many other people in the way it has changed her life. The bad thing about Botox is both the drug itself and the licenses and training to use it properly can be expensive. This has led to two distinct problems as people try to find cheaper ways to get the benefits of Botox. The first is counterfeit drugs, and the second is untrained and/or unlicensed people administering those drugs. So far, 19 people have reported harmful reactions across 9 states because of untrained and/or unlicensed people administering Botox and/or because of the administration of counterfeit Botox. All of the individuals who were affected, except one, received the injection for wrinkle reduction. Of those 19 people, 9 required hospitalization and 4 needed botulism antitoxin treatment because the injections became life-threatening. Texas is not among the 9 states where these cases have occurred, but with something as potentially fatal as botulinum toxin, everyone who receives this medication needs to be aware of the potential problems and know what to ask of the person administering in order to be safe. The Centers for Disease Control and Prevention, the CDC, recommends that you ask the person giving Botox if they are licensed and trained to give Botox injections. In addition, ask if the drug they are giving is approved by the Food and Drug Administration and if it came from a reliable source, a known pharmaceutical manufacturer. If the person administering cannot answer those questions, the CDC recommends you seek an alternative provider. If you do get a Botox injection and have blurry or double vision, droopy eyelids, difficulty breathing fatigue, slurred speech, or a hoarse voice, seek medical care immediately. The muscle paralysis that could be causing those symptoms could progress over hours to days and could be fatal. Unfortunately, those things can happen even with the right drug administered by a highly trained and licensed person. Even though Botox can be a miracle, it is still a very strong toxin. Because of that, it's always best to be safe and seek care if you have received a Botox injection and have unexpected symptoms. Botulism is not something anyone should ever have to experience.
Top of the World, Black Magic Spring Show brings upbeat pop. Permian High School's Black Magic Spring Show will take you to the top of the world May 2nd and 3rd at the Ector Theater. Doors open at 6 p.m. and the show begins at 7 p.m. Tickets may be purchased at the Ector Theater website, theector.com. Lori Alfred Wash, director of choirs at PHS, said the theme this year is On Top of the World with Black Magic. Performers will include Black Magic and Panther Paws. She said the theme was influenced by the recent trip to New York, where many in the group sang at Carnegie Hall. They have been working on the show, which features upbeat, inspirational pop music and dance, for the semester. Everyone come and join us as we appreciate the support of the community, Wash said. Dylan Chavez, a 16-year-old junior, and 17-year-old junior Jacob Lechenberg are each in their second year in Black Magic. If anyone were on the fence about coming to see the show, she would tell them, go for it. They have nothing to lose. It's a few hours out of their day where they probably be sitting at home and they could watch us and give us support, Chavez said. She added the relationship she's made with people is what she has enjoyed most about being part of Black Magic. You get close with people like you would in any other group. It's not like sports where everyone has tough love. It's constructive criticism from everybody, and it's a really loving and peaceful place to be in, Chavez said. She is also in Cantor High, the top varsity choir, and in Voca Lyrica, the varsity's women's choir. Chavez said she wanted to join Black Magic since seventh grade when she came to see the show. I had come to a Black Magic show for the first time when director Ken Seeloff was a director here, and just seeing the relationships that you could see on stage with people, the dancing, the singing, the soloists, the skits that happened, it was just so intriguing, and ever since then, I just wanted to join, she added. Lichtenberg said he's really excited about the upcoming show. I think it's going to be a great time, and I think a lot of people will enjoy themselves at this show because we like to not only entertain people, we also like to try to include the audience in the experience. So whether that be going out into the crowd or doing different things to show, it's not just us on the stage. We're trying to include the audience as well in the experience, Lichtenberg added. Like Chavez, Lichtenberg was prompted to join Black Magic in middle school. His choir teacher got him tickets and encouraged him to go to the show. I was on the fence, but I was like, hey, this looks kind of hokey. This doesn't really look like my thing. And instantly when they started, I was like, this is something I want to be a part of. So finally, being in this group, I've had so much fun, and I like to also inspire the people. I think if you're on the fence, it's a good time to get away from the rest of the world and have a good time, Lichtenberg said. He had nothing but fun in the group. Black Magic members and parents were working on building and painting the set for the show on a recent Tuesday. They don't mind putting in the extra time. Chavez said, it's satisfying to know people will see not only the work she puts in on stage, but on the setting for the show. As of right now, it's a very trust the process type of deal, but I know in the end it will be a good show. Miss Walsh is working so hard to just have us all looking good, sounding good. I think it'll be a good show, Chavez added. Lechenberg said he loves being involved in making the sets because he gets to see all the different pieces coming together. Just seeing, you know, okay, I put not only working with the music and getting better myself, I also put work into the set itself, and it makes it more satisfying. That's like, oh, I put work into this, and it wasn't just somebody else doing it for me. It's more satisfying for me, he added. He is also in the Variety Men's Choir and Mixed Varsity Choir. Chess tournament gets a big draw. Chess clubs from private schools around Odessa participated in a class tournament April the 27th at St. Mary's Central Catholic School Gym. The Odessa Christian Club is called OCS Checkmates, and St. Mary's is called SMCCS We Love Chess. 14 of the Odessa Christian School Checkmates Chess Club members participated, and 11 St. Mary's We Love Chess Club members participated. There were a total of 25 participants. The tournament began at 8:30 a.m. Saturday, and awards were presented at 3 p.m. 14 players went to the playoffs. Contest winners for the official Chess Club T-shirt contest: OCS Aurora Venezuela, St. Mary's, Zayden Jansen. Good Sportsmanship winner, St. Mary's, Audrey Hinojos. First place, OCS, Auden, Venezuela, 7th grade. Second place, St. Mary's, Ashen Lopez, 6th grade. Third place, OCS, Jake Moody, 7th grade. And fourth place, OCS, Sam Rowe, 5th grade. In between chess matches, the clubs enjoyed getting to know each other during lunch and through playing some other games, which allowed them to run around and take a mental break. Chess club teachers were SMCCS Penny Arnold with former ECISD teacher Sylvia Garcia and her teenage grandson, Tristan Garzas, as an assistant. OCS chess club teachers Deborah Johnson and Jessica Kolb and Johnson's former gifted and talented program students, now PHS students, Erica Chavez and Valerie Cervantes, as assistants. St. Mary's principal, Pat Salcito, and assistant principal, Elaine Randolph, were in attendance, as was principal of Odessa Christian School, Pam Walker.
Husband lashes out amid criticism of bad behavior. Dear Abby, my husband really says thank you and almost never apologizes for anything. The other day I was at an office party to which family members were not invited. I brought home a plate of food for my husband, he refused to thank me when I hinted that a thanks might be nice, especially since it was dinner time. The office lunch had been hours ago and I brought nothing for myself. He said because I hadn't come home when I said I would, he didn't feel the need to thank me. When I told him it's common courtesy to thank people, he continued arguing and eventually threw the plate of food across the room. Now he won't apologize for that either. He feels that he was justified in throwing the food. Abby, my husband is a college professor and well-educated, yet he often overlooks common courtesy. He usually walks fast and ahead of me when we're going places. He never says, "You look nice," and he leaves the house without mentioning where he is going. It doesn't concern him that it upsets me, as he is convinced that he is right about everything. The food throwing is an extreme example of his behavior, but it has me concerned about his mental health at this point. Advice, please. Never Thanked in New Jersey. Dear Never Thanked, your husband's mental health is fine. What you have described in detail is not new behavior. The professor has been an educated for years and is clearly unwilling to change. I would question your judgment for having tolerated his disrespectful behavior for the length of time you have, because he has shown you repeatedly that your feelings are little consequence to him. Dear Abby, my sister lost her husband a year ago. She has 3 grown children, but she has a fractured relationship with her 30-year-old daughter. I am heartbroken because I have 2 daughters and I can't imagine what my sister is going through. My niece was close to her father and has thrown in my sister's face that he was her person, and she told him everything. My niece and I have a good relationship, and she confides to me things she does not speak to her mother about. I am debating whether to speak to my niece to get the sense of what her issue with my sister really is. My niece blames her mother for everything. I'm not sure if trying to help will backfire. Please help. Involved Aunt in Connecticut. Dear Aunt, I am sure you mean well, but I don't think it would be helpful for you to insert yourself as a mediator between your sister and your niece. For whatever reason, your niece felt more comfortable confiding in her late father than in your sister. Stating the fact out loud was not throwing it in someone's face. Your relationship with your daughters is clearly different from the one your sister has with hers. Unless you want to alienate your niece, let the two of them work it out. Contact Dear Abby at www.dearabby.com or P.O. Box 69440, Los Angeles, California, 90069.
Thank you for joining us for the readings of the Midland Reporter-Telegram and the Odessa American. This is the Recording Library of West Texas, enriching the lives of individuals with physical, visual, and learning disabilities since 1963. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand with your computer or favorite mobile device at recordinglibrary.org.